Jonathan, I'm good, thanks.
Welcome, sir. Thank you for being joining us on Grim Chat.
Tell us a bit about yourself and how you first got into a music career.
So, tell us a bit about yourself and your music career.
So I'm in Queensland, and I've always loved music. I used it as my voice probably from age six. Yeah, just took to the piano straight away, and I loved it and singing. As a kid, I always dreamed of having a music career, but I didn't know about my disabilities at the time, and they stopped me from being able to have a career. But then later on, I was able to start really good productions, so giving me and anybody else who struggles to have a career a chance to perform on stage. That's the basics of it. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing, Sean. How has the journey been for you? You know, from when you started in the music industry to now?
I guess it's been a really rough journey because there was a lot of things that I didn't understand about myself. So it's just taken decades to figure that out and to, you know, understand my body and understand, you know, being autistic and doing a lot of healing along the way, trying not to fall into bitterness and anything negative while on the journey, and, you know, having to research and fight for answers and things like that. It's really great today that there is a lot more knowledge and that knowledge is being spread around. So definitely a lot easier today. Like if I had been, you know, starting that journey now, it wouldn't have taken so long and it would have been easier. But it's great to be out the other side, you know, to be on my feet, understand myself. Yeah.
How did you deal with the attitudes and I guess the assumptions that you couldn't do it? How did you manage to deal with that?
I guess because there wasn't the support and information that I needed, I just looked around for any opportunities that there were that I could do, whether it's what I dreamed of doing or not, because I thought there's no harm in learning whatever I can learn. And through doing that, like volunteering in the community and stuff, I met all these really cool people. And I guess I just took the knowledge I knew that was applicable for me and wrote it all down and kept it in a book, just hoping that one day I might get the chance. And so I think that was really what gave me the opportunity in the end. I have called organizations or emailed them and just said, hey, in regards to this situation, started a discussion with them. There's no point in getting angry or bitter or cynical because that doesn't get you anywhere. You know, not everyone's willing to have a discussion, so you've just got to, you know, leave them alone and take a break and then try again, you know, later on somewhere else. But a lot of people are willing to have that discussion. And so, yeah, I guess that's what I did, just tried to have discussions. But I always made sure I did it when I was in the right place to do it. Like if you're too sick, too tired, or too stressed from the situation, then, you personally aren't up for the discussion either. So, yeah, there's a lot of waiting, a lot of patience. Yeah.
I guess great things take time. You said that you met really cool people. Has that helped you build your confidence to where you are today?
You don't think so, because their story and journey is very different to mine. I appreciated meeting them for that rare moment of connection. I didn't have the opportunity to connect with people very often. So, I appreciated that moment of connection, but my confidence, I think, has always been in me because I have a kind of don't give up, that kind of grit inside of me, determination. And so it's my determination that has given me the confidence and trusting myself, trusting that, like, I have said yes to doing things. And then as soon as I've said yes, I'm like, oh my gosh, can I pull this off? I've just said yes to whatever was available because nothing much really was. And then I figured out how to do it later. And look, honestly, it's never gone wrong because I believe in myself. And yeah, it just comes from determination, I think, and knowing my worth that,
It's also, your determination has, I guess, built your confidence. In terms of supports, are you getting the supports that you need today as opposed to when you started in the music career?
You definitely have good support now. That started probably in the last couple of years. So when everybody went online, was forced online, that honestly was the only thing that opened up doors. Because I couldn't go to conferences and travel and do these things in person, I missed out on everything. But when everything became online and there were artists and musicians looking for work, that definitely did open up the world to me. So that's when I started Really Good Productions, because I knew if I didn't do it then, it would never happen. And it's still taken a while to find the right team, but I've got somebody starting to work with me in April, and he'll be the last member of the team that I need. Yeah, so it's very exciting.
Nice. No, that's awesome. And in terms of your production, can you show us a preview of the music that you've made? Or where can we go to get copies?
You want a preview?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can have a look at some home recordings on YouTube. So Really Good Productions on YouTube. You can watch some home recordings. The album, the official album, is still being edited, but it will come out soon. Yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, watch this space, people. Can't wait to hear it.
Thanks. Yeah.
Do you have any, advice for people who want to get into the music industry?
I think it's really important to trust your own body and not let anybody tell you that you can't do something or tell you how to do something. I found that one of the biggest issues and setbacks for me was everyone in the industry trying to tell me how to sing or how to use my body, what posture I must have. I think that the industry is slowly starting to move away from that now. It's starting to recognize that posture is not meant to be the same for everyone, that all of our bodies are different. And also your body, your posture is different when you're tired than when you're wide awake and full of energy and well rested. I think slowly it's improving in that knowledge, but I do know that because I didn't hold my body the way that every singer was told to and every dancer was told to, or performer, that definitely took away all of my opportunities. But now I've learned that when you approach someone to work with them, that you say to, you get in straight away, don't let them talk first. Introduce yourself confidently and then say to them, all right, let's get stuck into it. You tell me what you need and I'll tell you how I can do it. If you wait for them to talk first, then by the time you tell them, well, hey, I can't really sit in that chair or I can't really do that, but this is what I can do, it's too late. You're going to lose them. You've got to come in confidently, immediately say, all right, what is it you want? Okay, great. This is how I can do it. When do we start? And if you have that kind of attitude, that's how you're going to actually be remembered.
That's a great tip, sir. Thank you for that, sir. Jonathan, do you have any questions or thoughts you want to ask?
What was the inspiration behind your book, Same It Different?
I wrote my book because I've been involved with the disability community for a long time now. I've been involved with QDN. I'm also the Queensland Associate Director for Physical Disability Australia, and so and local community as well, because I'm passionate about, you know, communities thriving and supporting each other. One thing that you notice is that obviously children ask questions about things they don't know. And we all know what it's like when you're out in public and there's a family there with young kids and they stare at us or they point and things like that. And parents' typical response is don't stare, or they just sort of like pull the kid away and drag the kid away or don't ask that or something. And so, while this is improving, there are a lot more parents these days who actually say things like, well, why don't you ask? Just go up and ask them, which is a wonderful response because that's teaching the child, well, you know, we're all equal, we're all the same, and differences is fine. And it's teaching them to be able to talk with other people. If you say things like don't stare, then that has a negative connotation, even though parents don't mean it to. So I thought I'd write a book to help parents have that discussion with their children, because you don't know what to say if you're not familiar with, you know, with something. And a lot of people are not familiar with the disability community.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for that, John. How do you, impose yourself in the disability community? So how do you feel being part of the disability community?
So do you mean like how do I accept myself and or find my identity in the disabled community?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, well, that was a long journey. I think once I understood my disabilities, that was obviously the starting point. It's really difficult to be able to accept things or know how to work with them and enjoy your life if you don't understand and you lack the knowledge. Once I found all the information that I needed about my disabilities and what that meant for me and how to manage them and work well with them, then I could start the journey of finding my identity. I think the first identity that I struggled with or that I you know, searched for was the wheelchair one, you know, the physical limitations, especially when people can't see what the problem is. And at first, like for a while, I didn't want to actually see myself in a wheelchair. So, you know, like when you're going past glass shop windows and you see your reflection, I would never look. Got to a point where I looked and, you know, it's a bit confrontational, but, you know, at some point you've just got to go, yeah, this is me and this wheelchair is great. It gets me, you know, gives me a life. And I found that as long as I was worried about what people might say when they saw me get up and stand up or walk out of my wheelchair, then people would do that. As soon as you stop being afraid or worried, your vibes change and then everyone else responds to you according to your vibes. So if you're worried or scared, then they're going to give that back. But if you feel confident in yourself and you're just like, yeah, all right, I need a wheelchair a lot, but I can actually do a bit of walking or whatever, and they pick up on your vibe and they change how they respond to you. So then that was the first one. And then I had to find my identity as somebody who's hard of hearing and all of the different elements that come with that, because hard of hearing doesn't just mean one thing. And my experience with hearing loss is very different to a lot of other people with hearing loss. So I felt like I was all alone and I didn't have anyone who understood. But just, you know, I started learning Auslan and I joined the deaf community, and it didn't take long then for me to find my identity because I put myself out there. And then the third identity that I had to find was the autistic one. That was tricky because that was a lot harder to find correct information. But once I did, again, it was like, oh, I understand myself now. So, yeah.
Tell us about Mim and Zip and disability teams you are trying to impart on children.
So, Jonathan, your question, yes. You want to hear about the two characters in my book and the disability themes that I want to pass on. So my target audience, I know it seems like it's children. I guess it is. It's children and adults, because this is very much also for the adults to help support them when they're answering children's questions. And the book was designed for both the adults and the children. So the two characters are Pip and Mim. Pip is deaf and Mim uses a wheelchair, and they're best friends. The book starts out with introducing them and explaining what a wheelchair is and explaining what hearing aids are. The wording that I've used is very particular because a lot of people still think that everyone who uses a wheelchair is paralyzed, where of course there's so many reasons. And a lot of people, like 90% of people who use wheelchairs, have some movement in their legs. Even if they can't walk, there's still some sort of movement and there's feeling. So anyway, so then after you're introduced to the wheelchair and the hearing aids, then the book focuses on what makes Mim and Pip the same as all the other kids. And the story plays out in a park, where all of the children play ball together, and they learn how Mim can play ball in a wheelchair and things like that. And then the last section helps adults and children to feel more at ease about interacting with disabled people. It's basically saying, don't assume you know what they need. It's okay to ask, but it's also okay for them to decline your offer and say, no, thanks, I've got it sorted, it's all in hand. A lot of able-bodied people don't like being told, thanks for the offer, but I'm okay. They don't like being told that, and they'll take over anyway and cause trouble. So, yeah, that's kind of what the focus is, and the kind of help, or, you know, theme that I wanted to get out there. And it's the first in a series of six. The second book I'm writing at the moment, and it's going to introduce their pets, Mim's paralyzed cat that's got a harness with wheels, and Pip's deaf dog who he signs with. I should also add there is Auslan in the books as well. So there is Auslan in this book. And yeah, then once you meet their pets, you then get introduced to other children with different disabilities to Pip and Mim and their assistance animals. So like there's a guide dog and a hearing dog, an emotional, you know, emotional support animal. And then there's a different, a support dog for disabilities like EDS or POTS, where they have a very different and yet still very specific duty, like deep pressure massage and things like that. So that's what the second book is going to be about. And then the other books are all going to have children with different disabilities to Mim and Pip, because there are a lot of misconceptions out there, like strokes only happen to old people, or, you know, all kinds of interesting thoughts. Yeah, so I just wanted to get it all out there.
Yeah. Nah, cool, cool. Thanks for sharing. What's the name of your book?
It's called Different Yet the Same.
Oh, yeah. So be sure to check it out, people. You know, how can we obtain a copy?
My website is wheeliegoodproductions.org, wheelie with an IE. Jonathan's asked me another question. How do you use arts as a vehicle for inclusion for people with disabilities? Yeah, good question. I just looked at what I needed but didn't have. And then as I started looking at that, it occurred to me that there are a lot of able-bodied hearing people in the industry that really struggle. There's a really high percentage of mental health issues in the performing arts. And I thought, you know, everybody deserves to work in an environment that is good for their health and well-being, whatever that may look like. And so I started coming up with ways of being inclusive for everybody, you know, every age, every physical ability, different cultures, you know, whatever, and actually have a fully immersive, inclusive cast or working environment where everybody gets an equal opportunity, an equal chance. And I think, you know, that's the message I want to get out there is with my shows, is I don't want anybody highlighted above anybody else. I've even been denied doing an audition just because of my voice type. They wouldn't even let me sing. They wouldn't even let me audition at all just because I'm a mezzo. So that's not even because of my health issues or my disability. I was just blown away. And he had bias because of past experiences. And then he just coloured everyone with the same brush. So then actually that particular person, he saw me performing in a concert and he was blown away by my voice and apologised profusely afterwards, and he told me he'd learned his lesson. So that was nice. So I wanted to come up with a different format. Everybody works by the same rules, and I thought we don't have to. I wanted to come up with a different format so that everything that I write, all the musicals and shows that I write, could be easily adapted to whatever cast wants to put it on. And I came up with a couple of really good ideas. And in the end, we're going to focus on writing shorter musicals because they're honestly a lot quicker to write. And people who don't have a lot of energy can perform the whole show then as well. Are you asking me how I cope with the physical and emotional demands? Is that the one?
Yes.
All right. So that was a tricky one to work out. I realised that I need to have nothing to do with people before and after the show. Part of my condition means that I get a massive adrenaline rush, and this can be, you know, ages before the show even starts. But the problem with that is by the time I'm performing, I have a dump. So I'm really fatigued, I'm weak, I can't even sit up, I can't talk. Not exactly ideal for performing. So if I completely cut myself off from everybody before and after performing and keep that quiet, that really helps. I never perform alone. I always have at least one other person so that I can actually lie down in between each piano solo or song or whatever I'm doing. The only downside to this is that, yeah, I mean, I don't like it. It does make me sad, But in order to stop that massive adrenaline boost, it means I can't actually enjoy myself. I have to completely deaden everything inside of me. You want to get out there and enjoy yourself and have fun, but that actually makes causes a flare-up. So, yeah, but hey, I'm just grateful that I can do it because I still have those memories and I still did it and I still shared my talents. So I kind of enjoy it after the fact, you know, but not so much during. Yeah. I know a lot of people with my condition, they've asked the same thing. I've seen this in the chats, the support groups online. And I said, hey, look, I'm sorry, but this is the only thing I've come up with. And they're like, yeah, I thought that might be the only way to go, but oh well. So would you like me to share some experiences?
Yes.
Okay. One of the first things that comes to my mind was when I got my wheelchair, I did not have a ramp on my house. So I was doing fundraising and one of the things I did was hold a concert and I grabbed a whole heap of people that I know to come and perform. I had written a big, massive piano solo that I can't even really play professionally enough because of my disability, but I played it and I said to the audience, I don't have a title for it. So I brought in a prize and I brought in pens and paper and asked everyone to write down a title. Going through everyone's responses and seeing what the piece of music made them think of was really cool. I came across the best title ever, loved it. So I think that's probably the first thing that comes to my mind. I'm lucky that I got to perform in Les Miserables before I needed the wheelchair and before my eyesight and hearing got worse, because there's no way I could pull that off now. So very fortunate to do that. I'll tell you a funny story. I did sing with the Royal Melbourne Philharmonic Orchestra in 2013. And the MSO were doing a performance of Lord of the Rings at that time with Maestro Ludwig Wiecki. He's the one that conducted the music for the films. And when he retired, he edited all of the music so that the movies could be watched with the music, an orchestra playing the music live. Because when they're doing it for the film, it's not like a live orchestra. There's a lot of bits that they do separately and all kinds of interesting things. So he edited the music so we could do that live to the film. But the thing is that they didn't have the right seats. So technically, if you're sitting for a short time, then the seats sort of tip forward a little bit. And then if you're sitting a long time, it's got to sit more that back that way so that, you know, gravity is not pulling you forward off the seat. Well, with my disability, that amplified the need for correct seating for sitting for 3.5 hours straight, even more. And but they had the wrong seats and they were tilted forward. Now, I've got a weird kind of scoliosis, so my right scapula does stick out. I've got a winged scapula. So because of the material of my dress, I was literally sliding off the seat the whole 3 hours. So I had to put my scapula over the back of the seat to stop me from falling off. And obviously, you know, my body didn't like that later, but, you know, you do what you got to do. And then every time we sang, we stood up. But I, unfortunately, was positioned behind the tubular bells, which are, you know, really, really high and the long bells hanging from a frame. So I kind of had to, like, be all warped and everything to try and see the conductor. But I really loved doing that because film orchestras are quite different to symphonic orchestras. They don't have all of the same instruments. So being able to sit in amongst, you know, behind a celeste and see how the percussionists made the sound of the orc footsteps when they're marching was so exciting, and to sit right behind that. It might have taken 6 months for my body to recover, but, you know, I mean, I would do it all again. because that was an amazing experience. I did manage to get a signature off Maestro Ludwig Wiecki, and I thanked him for, you know, traveling the world and doing this and giving people a chance to do shows like that. And I expressed to him my absolute delight in seeing a Celeste in person. I'd learned about them when I was six and never thought I'd get to see one. So he said, oh, go up and play it. So I did. I know, one piece off by heart. It was perfect for the Celeste even. And, there was a whole entourage of people that came up on the stage saying I wasn't allowed to be playing that, that Maestro had no right to tell me I could because it's not his. So that was fun.
Are there any final thoughts you would like to share with our audience?
Well, obviously I'd like everybody to know that Wheelie Good Productions is does exist, that we are writing shows to give access, and it's not just to the disabled actors and the deaf actors and singers. We don't have opportunities. The only opportunities for disabled actors are anyone who's got really good health. So I want to let everybody know, yeah, I am writing these and I will be selling them so people anywhere can perform them. We're finishing off scripts this year. So next year we'll be ready to perform and sell the rights to these shows. But the other audience that really misses out, I was really fortunate to speak with a group of people at APAX in Cairns last year. So that's the Australian Performing Arts Exchange, where producers and presenters from all over the country meet and people get to do present the idea of their show for these presenters and producers, and hopefully, you know, get chosen to perform. And I did speak with a lovely group of, actually they're all disabled, of young people from South Australia. And I was explaining to them that what I wanted to do was write all of these shows and then sell the rights so that everybody had the chance to perform in a way that's good for them. And their leader, their teacher said to me how grateful she was for that, because everyone in the cities assumes that people in rural towns need to be entertained. They don't think about the fact that the rural towns have a lot of talent in them and don't give them the opportunity to actually join in and perform themselves. So I realised that there was a whole other group of people that deserved the opportunity to perform as well. Yeah, so, you know, get onto my website and sign up so that I can keep you informed. I'm on YouTube and I'm on Facebook. Just know that I don't work the same as everyone else because I do have chronic illness and disability myself, and I haven't had all of the support that I've needed to work, you know, the way that you need to in order to be seen, etc. But I am there, and I always do updates when there is something to update. I just work a lot slower than everyone else, as I'm sure this audience understands and appreciates. But also, I think really what's important for everyone to remember is that the whole purpose behind the arts seems to have been forgotten in this day and age. And I just want to remind everybody that if you have always wanted to learn music or dance or photography or any type of the arts, then go for it. A lot of people limit themselves because they believe that you should only have lessons or experience it if you're talented. What I'd like to say to that is you, the individual, and your family and friends, none of you know how to recognize potential. So please don't make a decision and limit yourself based on that, because none of you know how to gauge potential and recognize it. And I see this a lot with my students when I'm teaching singing and piano, and I've said to my students, that was fantastic, loved it, that's exactly what we wanted. But they don't understand why I'm saying that, because they've still got so far to go in whatever they're learning. And when I try and explain to them, it's because we're focusing on this one little bit And with that one little bit, that's exactly what we wanted. And so that's why I'm saying that. And they still feel very much like you can't praise it because we're not finished yet, or I'm not good enough yet, or something. And I find this very sad, and I do find it a bit troubling, because if that's how they feel about learning piano or singing or whatever in the arts, then that's how they see themselves everywhere in life. And to me, that's really sad. So just remember, don't listen to everybody else. Listen to yourself. If you have a burning desire, there is a reason. I have to say 90% of my students in the last 30 years that have come to me is because they've had this burning desire to learn the music, but they didn't know why. And it's through doing some sessions with me and through learning how to use their bodies to express themselves musically that they've discovered that there was some unmet emotional, mental, you know, psychological need that they've had for years. And through learning how to express themselves through music, they've discovered that. And that was the reason they had this burning desire, because their body knew that that was the method that they were going to find healing or find their autonomy or find their voice or find some sort of understanding that they needed. And then they don't have lessons anymore and they go away very happy. Please don't limit yourself because you think and or people tell you that you don't have potential or you're not talented. Essentially, talent is potential. Go to somebody who can actually recognize potential and just trust them. And trust yourself, because your body's speaking to you, your spirit's speaking to you, so listen. The other reason that they give is that they're not going to have a career in it or use that talent publicly. And my response to that is, so? It's in the journey. It's in the process of learning a new skill. It's in the process of being vulnerable through the method of arts, whichever art form you choose, you really discover yourself in a way that you never have before. You find freedom in that. So please, again, don't limit yourself because it's just something that you have for you in the privacy of your own home. The arts are necessary for our health and well-being, very much so. If we go back to the purpose of the arts, that being the purpose, then we'll all be a lot happier and healthier, I think.
Thank you, Sarah. You've been watching Clips at Your Weekly Podcast on every week. This is David Lee, Snake Maker, talk about more things, disability,